Hi, folks. Jack Spierko here. We are live at Permaculture Voices. I guess it's not live for you guys, but it's live for us because we're not going to be able to edit anything. There's no intros today. I just wanted to get something up today for you guys to let you guys know what's going on out here. Some really cool stuff. I'm actually sitting here right now with kind of a fan favorite. It's been on the show quite a few times, Xavier Hawk, and he's got some interesting things to tell us. Many of you have been following my frustrations with PermaEthos. I don't know that Xavier's solution is going to be necessary for us right now because we've got a new angle I'll talk about in a little bit as well. But we're looking to try to fund a lot of initiatives in the permaculture movement. And we run into problems with government and funding and SEC. And Xavier's got kind of a creative way to stick it to the man by ignoring the man, which is something I really am a big fan of. You can fight a battle or you can just fight your own battle. And that seems like what Xavier's onto now. So you want to tell folks just kind of what you were talking about out here yesterday? I missed your presentation because you were kind of put in there at the last minute.
Yeah, I was a pinch hitter here. Diego called me and said, hey, can you make it? And I was like, of course. And I had my presentation, you know, ready. Basically, what I'm here to talk about is Buckminster Fuller's concept of you don't fight an establishment by fighting it. You just make something and create something new that makes it obsolete. And with the technological advancements of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin 2.0 protocol specifically, we're able to bypass all of the regulatory issues that people face in terms of getting funding. We're creating a coin specifically to the meme and ideology and value system of permaculture, where people will be able to turn around and buy our coin, and that those funds that they purchase our coin with will go to funding more permaculture developments, eco-developments like you and I have talked about, your farms, PermaEthos, and wind farms, solar farms, anything that's about building a sane, healthy, and happy planet, we will be able to bring into our network with permacredits.
Yo, I'm excited to hear this from you, and I mean, I think you've seen the same thing I have. There's plenty of people out there that are actually willing to invest, from small investors to some really big investors. Mm-hmm. And the really big investors you can bring in because they're accredited and they qualify under SEC accreditation and all this other BS. But what makes up the bulk of the investment is the little person that's willing to, you know, pony up $500 or $1,000.
Right.
And they're not the accredited investor. They've been written out of the best investments in history for their own protection, of course. Because you need to protect the person when they're risking $500, right?
Yeah.
So how exactly does this get around that?
Well, because we're not asking for investors. We're asking for people to buy our product, which is a coin, a Bitcoin 2.0 protocol, essentially, that allows all sorts of contracts to be written in, voting mechanisms, remittances, all kinds. It's kind of like money 2.0. They're buying a token, essentially, a cryptographic token that's on the internet, and in exchange for that, they're giving us bitcoins or whatever, and we give them those coins that they can vote in what kind of projects they all want to build together. We have a permaculture council that chooses what projects are going to be successful, and I'm hoping you'll be on that. And we have the ability to give a return as a gift. Whatever profits are made by the entire network get shared as a gift between those who are involved in the network, as like a membership.
See, and I think that really takes the community level. And the other thing about it is, we were discussing this over lunch, we're not looking to circumvent tax law here. We're looking to effectively allow the capitalization of revenue into going concerns. But once the going concern's operational, these individual businesses,
they have to pay their own taxes.
They have to pay their own taxes like any other
business.
And
the government will make their money, and everybody will be satisfied. It's just a way of bringing, the way I put it in my presentation, is the financial nutrients in our collective permaculture soil. Because the way we are as a civilization going to survive is with permaculture. If we make it through the next decade, two decades, it's going to be utilizing the principles that permaculture espouses, and that's how we're going to make it. Because we can't manage the planet the way we are now.
Now, I know about this council. You've asked me if I would be interested in serving on it. I definitely would.
Word.
But for the audience that's not here and hasn't been, you know, here for the last 2 days, can you explain exactly what the role of that council is and how we'll keep the council impartial so it's not like I'm you know, approving my buddy's stuff? I mean, I'm a jerk, right? I'm a dick. I'm not going to do that anyway. But how do we, you know, ensure the honor of the council, so to speak, and make sure that we are, you know, giving our recommendations to projects that are really worthy and well-thought-out business proposals.
Okay, so everybody who's involved in PermaCredits gets a vote, right? And the ecosystem of everybody involved, there's going to be people who have their projects that they think are going to succeed. And when they put forth their projects, they're putting it forth between them and the community as a whole. The naturally good projects are going to percolate to the top because everybody's going to be putting their mind on it and saying, is this good or not? And the naturally good ones will get there. Your job and the other Permaculture Jedi Council, you're not there to make it succeed or choose which one. You're just to make sure that, okay, out of the ones that have come to the top, we're going to harvest this one and this one and this one. You just make sure that they are going to make profits, that they are adhering to the permaculture principles, that they're going to rejuvenate the soil, take care of their people, and take care of the planet.
And we might not thumbs down something. We might say this project will work if you add this to it or remove this
exactly.
You know, based on an analysis from a pure business and just from a functional standpoint, based on our knowledge of business and permaculture. And what you're describing is kind of like backwards American Idol, which would be a better way to do it, right? In American Idol, the judges pick all the top and then let the people vote on what's left.
Right.
Well, where this is, the people actually float things to the top.
Exactly.
And then the judges basically are saying, look, this has a fundamental flaw. It's a great idea,
right,
but this flaw is irreconcilable at this point. This person needs to go back
and work
and take
on
another
it,
and bring it back
yeah,
to the
exactly.
system again. Or this one is good to go as is.
And this will ensure product quality, it'll ensure profitability, and it'll ensure global impact. And we're not just funding farms and eco-villages, but we can do hydro plants. And any company that whose tenants are based in permaculture.
Or technology making, development, right?
Exactly.
You always hear about technologies being squashed because they can't get funding, right?
Right.
Where we could just say, well, this technology looks promising. We're going to, and something like that, you'd probably give them a little, like a grant and say, like, prove it out. And if you do prove a concept,
exactly,
then we'll run with you. So we'll have a lot of flexibility
yeah.
like that.
And what's great is that it's a local currency, meaning that it's a local currency for the global movement. Because with Bitcoin and all of the derivatives of Bitcoin, like altcoins like Aurora Coin and Maza Coin and PermaCredits, you can trade them across the globe with no friction and no fees, no chargebacks, none of this. And so if we have a village in Thailand that is producing tempeh and they're looking for distributors in the United States, we can work directly with them. There is no going through wire transfers and all this other nonsense. It's like we have a global network, but it's decentralized. There's nobody in charge. The council, it's like I'm building a wind-up toy that I want to give to the world and say, here, this is all it takes is a couple guys who can be rotating, you know, and that are deciding this project is going to succeed based upon my experience. And then the community is deciding autonomously, consensus-wise, via an incentivized voting process on top of the coin.
Awesome, awesome. So how far out are you from this? I mean, this, like, we've had a lot of great ideas that have taken years to come to fruition. You're not far away on this, are you?
No, like PermaEthos, we're like right there on the cutting edge of what's happening. And the technology's happening so fast that, like, we are going to be first to market with the first asset-backed cryptocurrency. That is not happened yet, and we're going to do it, and we're going to be representing permaculture, the values. Like, local is the new global. Our values make us locals now, not geography. And so we're ready to launch this spring.
Well, I love what you just said, right? So what we've always had is we need a movement locally, of people that, you know, understand principles and can work together. The problem has been that the person that's local to you is the soccer mom that wants a golf course installed.
Healthy food. I mean, she might want a golf course. She might
yeah.
want a Maybach.
Yeah.
But right now, the trends are changing from high rises and, you know, fancy cars to fruits and vegetables that are healthy, clean water. Like, even the most, like, unplugged, bobble-headed lawyers in wherever, they are recognizing that fresh food and vegetables and clean water is important, you know? And so if we can just turn around and say, this is the value add, this is what you're getting, that's what they want. They don't necessarily want the dreadlock, crusty, hippie farmer guy, but they want the produce, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we're able to do that now. And
but where I was going with that is more along the lines of, a lot of times, like, people want it, but they don't know where to find it, they can't get it, and you need the people that are active to get the first mover stuff
yeah,
going,
yeah.
and they're now able to commune across thousands of miles across oceans and act locally, globally.
Exactly.
So they say, think globally and act locally. We're going to flip that around, basically,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to think locally, globally, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's like, we're
global
just totally changing that.
Well, Gary Vaynerchuk, he always was, you know, proposing, like, now everybody wants, to, like, the 1900s, where you go to your local butcher, and he sees you coming through, and he sees your kids, and he's got the lollipops that your kids like. That personal relationship?
Yeah.
Because we're a global village now, and we're separated by miles, but we have the internet. I mean, a lot of my friends have never met each other, but they're, like, dear friends and support each other's businesses. It's creating a greater level of trust in each other and humanity.
Aren't you noticing that, and I've seen this in my own business, and Joel Salatin said this yesterday, when you're doing good things, there's people in your customer base that want your success even more than you do.
That's how
they
I feel about you sometimes. Yeah,
you.
Totally.
Well, thank you for that, man. I'm seeing that more and more, and in this small group that's formed around us right now, I've had conversations with people around here where I'm seeing that, and they're seeing that, and it does seem like a dynamic shift. Like, I talked to Jeff, and I said, you know, Jeff Lawton, and I said, dude, when you took your PDC in 1983, what did you think was going to happen? He said, I thought this would all be global policy by 1990,
yeah.
Right? And I think a lot of people from those early
yeah.
days with Bill Mollison going out and just guerrilla teaching these PDCs all over the world
yeah.
felt like it was like, this is just what everybody's going to do.
Well, they're right.
But it didn't happen as quick as they said. But now it seems like we're on the tipping point that they expected right away. Like
yeah.
the mainstream acceptance of maybe not the word permaculture, but the concepts, ethics-driven decision-making, not
yeah.
trusting someone else to fix your problem anymore, wanting a say in things.
That's right.
Right? And having some level of accountability for people that basically screw things up. Without saying, oh, would you please come here from the local official office and fix it for me, or will the president fix it for me? I heard one guy today, I really think he's a great guy, but he was talking about, like, the president's looking for a direction. Like, that's a government that doesn't know what to do anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we'll give you our own direction by taking it, and I kind of feel like, in many ways, people are just turning their back on government and using apathy as a weapon.
Yeah.
But it's instead of, like, apathy that's weak apathy, it's empowered apathy.
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't care. It's like, I do care, but I don't care about you, so I'm going to go do this.
Right. Yeah, it's like I said with Buckminster Fuller, let's make those systems that are not serving us obsolete.
Yeah, and one of my favorite people was Steve Jobs, who said, if you don't obsolete your own products, your competition soon will. Well,
yeah.
It's about time the competition got busy.
That's right.
Right, because they haven't been innovating anything. They haven't innovated education. Education's been the same model since the 1880s.
Yeah.
Right? So think about that, Xavier, right? So we've had the same model of education since the 1880s, a Prussian education model.
Yeah.
Your kids are walking around with a cell phone that has more computing power than you and I could get our hands on
yeah.
if we had Bill Gates' budget or Steve Jobs' budget in the 1980s.
Right.
And yet our educational model is still the same. So I think we're on the cusp of changing a lot of these things.
And it's a lot of the technologies that are coming that are enabling us to self-regulate, to self-govern, to create consensus on a platform where people are integrated and working together just based on their merit rather than their trust in they're given this job and they might be, you know, being cronyism.
Voluntary association.
Yeah.
And as we finish up, can you talk real quick about how we can actually use Bitcoin to run things like elections or voting on initiatives and actually, you know, have an honest system?
Okay, so Bitcoin is run on what's called a blockchain, which is essentially a long string of numbers chunked into blocks of those, and they're cryptographically enclosed in a cryptography, and you use miners, computer program software, and hardware to unlock that cryptography. And as you unlock that cryptography, those blocks are unlocked, and you've got bitcoins in them. But that blockchain operates as an open ledger, so you can have people voting, putting their bitcoin into a thing, and it comes right back to them with their vote, yes or no. And it's an open ledger of.
So like, anybody can audit it.
Exactly, in real time on the blockchain. In fact, there's a company called blockchain.info which does that for Bitcoin right now.
It's very cool.
So the
man.
Blockchain 2.0 is basically like Ethereum and MasterCoin and all these other things that are coming out that allow you to do a lot of stuff rather than just a currency, because Satoshi Nakamoto, he created it, but he said it's going to have all of these possibilities, protocols, but we're just going to focus on the coin for the beginning. So yeah, it's basically like, this is the operational protocol which we will run the future of this planet on. And if you want to find more about permacredits, it's permacredits.com. We've got a cool video. Sign up on the email list and we'll let you know as things progress. And if you've got people that you think should be on the council, tweet them and tell them they should be on the council.
Cool, man. Well, we'll wrap there. I'm going to have you on the air as you get closer to this to do a full episode on it.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, man, definitely. And what I want to do now, I want to bring John on to talk a little bit about AgriTrue, because it's like everything's happening at one time. So John, John, I've known you so long, and I still can't pronounce your last name right. I've been saying Krislinger for so long. Your last name actually is?
Kitsteiner.
That's pretty easy.
It looks scary.
I would spend more time on the phone with you than you know, talking to you by email, I would have your name right by now.
We have a modern relationship spent on email.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually been friends while you were in Turkey. Now you're in the Azores.
Yes.
AgriTrue was the thing that came up in my mind about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Rather than me rehashing it, can you talk about where we are today and the fact that people actually can go ahead and sign up and register for AgriTrue right now? We need some people to do it because we birthed this website and it doesn't do anything yet because there's nobody in it yet.
Nobody there yet. Yeah. Well,
who's going to be first, right? Who's going to be the first producer to register for AgriTrue?
I'm excited to find that out. We just launched literally yesterday morning. The website is up and running. And, this has been a three-year process. Lots of ups and downs, but it's actually here, finally here. And I'm really excited about it. The idea of going to a place and finding out where your food came from, who made it, what's in it, what's not in it, has been really been my passion in running this program, getting the site up and running for quite a while. And as a physician, this is I'm extremely passionate about getting healthy food to our people, to my family, to my kids. And I'm really excited to see who's going to get out there and start signing up, who's going to get their farms up there. I've already talked to a bunch of people here already who say, I don't even have a farm, but I want to start supporting what you're doing. How do I do that as well?
And we have a supporting membership for that where people can basically just join for like $14.95 a year we came up with, where it's just like basically as a token saying, we believe in what you're doing. And I'll tell you why I think it's important that we get people to do that. As we're going to producers, when you can turn around and say we have 5,000 people, they don't just use the site. They believe in it so much. They're willing to financially support it. Mm-hmm. That establishes that there's a market. Mm-hmm. The other thing I see that if producers will lock onto it, we've given them a massive marketing tool.
Yep.
I mean, when you look at what we can do, we're now a producer, once they have their certification, has a QR code, a little block code, mm-hmm. and if their product is sitting in a farmer's market, and I walk up to it and I want to know everything about that product, I can take my phone, I can scan that QR code, I see their profile, I know if they manage the soil, I know how they treat their animals. If I'm not sure about something, I can ask them a question, mm-hmm. and then they answer that question for me. And there's an accountability, like we were just talking about Bitcoin and how we could turn it into this yep. thing with permacredits and all, and accountability. That was the vision with AgriTrue as well, as an accountability to the marketplace. So a person might be AgriTrue certified, not quite actually in some technical way meet organic, but that animal might be treated a lot better. We heard today about organic free-range chickens that are kept in a chicken house with no sunlight for the first 4 weeks of their lives and slaughtered at 6 weeks. Well, that's not what a consumer thinks they're buying, but if you're buying a chicken from an AgriTrue producer, how would you know how that person's taking care of their birds?
You know, it's going to be a very easy process just going over to the website and looking up that producer, either scanning their code or just typing in their information, or going into our search engine and typing in your address and what you're looking for, and then you will get these profiles of the local farmers that are in the area. Very similar to an Amazon system or any other group consensus voting or...
Because yeah, producers can be reviewed, right?
Yeah, it's a review process where you can get on and see what other people think. And nowadays, we do this with Amazon. We want to find out who is selling whatever product that we want. Well, we've got 10 choices. How do we know which is the one that we want? And we go and we look and get other people's opinions on it so that we don't have to completely experiment every time. The where was I going with that? And we were talking yesterday. We listened to Joel Salatin yesterday, and he is not an organic producer at
no.
all. But
no.
I would eat any food off of his farm in
Correctly.
A second, in a minute.
Correct.
And he has decided that he does not want to go through the hassle of all the government regulations to be an organic producer. But yet he is still producing high quality food. The idea from the inception of AgriTrue was transparency in food production. I, again, want to know what is in my food. We go to the grocery store right now, and we see all this stuff there. We might see that it came from Chile, or it came from, you know, Chicago or Washington, but we don't know anything about that other than the location.
You certainly don't know who grew it.
We don't know. And you might get a company name. And there are some places that are starting to, you know, at least put a farm name there. But we don't have anything more about the information about how it was raised. And so you can go to the site. You can see the questions that other people have already asked. Every single producer initially puts information about their farm, about their produce, about how it was raised. They have an AgriTrue pledge at the beginning where they are going to agree not to use GMO products. And they agree to answer questions. And if any of the producers are not going to stay involved and stay connected to the community, they're no longer going to be able to be a producer here.
Because that's so, part of our certification. Instead of somebody reviewing you and grilling you and auditing you, it's when the community asks you, you know, where do you house these rabbits? And you refuse to disclose that. Well, we're not necessarily telling you how to house your rabbits, but we are saying that if you're asked, mm-hmm. we expect that you would disclose to your consumer how those rabbits are housed. Simply so that we might even say it's totally okay, but that consumer might want some kind of thing that is, you know, Uber rabbit tractoring or something like that. And he might not be able to find it, but he's entitled to know what he's buying.
Yeah, the idea was never to create a brand new system of regulation. That's not for us to do. The idea is to more crowdsource this. Let everybody else out there in that local community go out there, take a look at the farm, walk the farm, talk to that farmer, put their reviews back on the site so that other people will know this.
Because we actually have levels for our producers, and some of the requirements as you move up with a higher level certification is that you've had some positive reviews, right?
Correct.
That allows, it also incentivizes the farmer to ask his customer to give him a review.
Exactly, and the review process is going to be vital to this. But we're also subtly trying to direct the direction of food production as well by incentivizing permaculture producers, incentivizing people to become organic producers or biodynamic producers or grass-fed certified producers. There are all these other certifications that
are badges on your profile.
Exactly.
And that way the customer says, oh, I want organic, plus I want the animals treated ethically, can find that. Now, I actually think we have a huge advantage over USDA organic, even though we're tiny and just getting started. I learned something today that I didn't know. So let's say that you went out and started your farm, John, and you said, I am going to farm chickens, and I'm going to do everything beyond organic. Mm-hmm. And then you went out and you got the organic certification from USDA. And, of course, you wouldn't be using any GMOs. So then you want to put on your chicken USDA certified organic, no GMOs.
Yeah.
You legally can't put no GMO on your chicken.
You're not allowed to.
But if you're AgriTrue certified, you can.
Yeah.
So we don't handcuff you with additional restrictions just because you use our name. We simply want you to abide by the AgriTrue pledge. Again, no fertilizer, no chemical fertilizers, no herbicides, no chemical fungicides, humane treatment of animals, conserve and restore your soil, and no genetically modified organisms.
Yep.
You do that, you say anything else you want about yourself. In fact, please do. We've made it easy for you to do that.
Yeah, and the idea, again, is about transparency. People have a desire to know where their food came from, to know the people, to build that community again with their local farmers, to be able to take their kids out to the farm and say, hey, this is where our food comes from. And that is important. The other thing is that is really exciting to me is that so many people don't understand or don't realize how many local farmers you have around you. There are so many people that are producing food in what seems like a backyard lot and producing food in an open field near your home, near your community, larger farms that are there that sell to the public, and people don't even know that these local farms exist. They don't even know the quality of the food that is being produced in their local area. And our idea is to help make people aware of who is available in their local area producing food in the way that that consumer is looking for. Again, if that person's looking for organic food, or if they're looking for grass-fed, or if they're looking just for something unique, quail, or quail eggs, or persimmons, this is going to be a way to connect that food producer with that food consumer.
And long term, we will be able to allow people to start producing value-added products with the AgriTrue label, because as long, even if you're not, you know, producing a component of your value add, as long as you're getting it from an AgriTrue certified producer and everything in the product is AgriTrue, and then we would actually be able to tell you in that product, here's all the producers that are part of that product. And that's probably a little ways off before we can get to that level, but we need to establish the producer base first. But you would actually have like a jar of strawberry preserves, and you know, if they were sweetened with honey from an AgriTrue producer in California, and the raspberries were from an AgriTrue producer, or you know, strawberries or raspberries in Pennsylvania, you'd be actually able to know all the families that actually produced your food for you. And that's something that the government would never be able to do, because they're not clever enough to figure out that people care.
Yeah, exactly. And people really do care about this stuff. They want to know where their food comes from.
If they didn't, all these giant farms wouldn't put a picture of a little tractor and a little red barn and all on their label, when there is no tractor and red barn. There's a giant Tyson chicken house. And it's really like a modern-day like concentration camp for chickens. I mean, the conditions, like, so, like, it's completely inconsistent with permaculture, because it's not caring for the earth. Mm-hmm. It's not caring for the animals. It's not caring for people. The people in those systems are almost as miserable as the animals in those systems. Yeah. And what we're just saying is, if the public knew that and had a choice, they probably wouldn't make that choice.
Yeah, and the knowledge is power here. And when people understand and know their local producer, they're motivated to support them. We were just talking earlier about how Joel Salatin said that when you get people who are motivated about what you're doing, they become more passionate about it than you are. They want you to succeed more than you do. And what we're trying to do is just give that opportunity, not only to the producers to do that, but really for the producers to find their cheerleading section, to find their passionate consumers, their passionate customers.
And, I mean, folks could sign up right now, either as producers. Can you talk about the pricing model we have? Because we're letting producers in, like, stupid cheap to get some in, and then supporting members can just join as well.
Yeah, we're definitely trying to reward those early adopters, those first couple people who sign up. Very, very low cost, you know, $1 to $10 to $25 for the first year, and then you get kind of locked in at a very low rate. It's really up until we get up to about the first 1,000 producers that those price locks start to go away. And so this is, if you are a producer right now, this is a fantastic time to sign up for it. And I don't want to come across sounding too marketing, because I'm definitely not that kind of schmoozer marketing type person. I'm just so excited about this. I'm so excited after 3 years of finally getting this. And, you know, I've been back in the States for a little while, and I'm driving down the road. I was just outside of Nashville, and I see a Tyson chicken house, a mile down the road, another Tyson chicken house. And I was like, oh my goodness, where am I moving to? And then I see this van that pulls out, and it's a CSA van, and it's got, you know, this organic label on it. And it was so exciting. But I realized, you know, how many people around here don't have a clue that this place exists,
that's
even available. And so to me, coming back to this area and seeing that this is a possibility of getting back connected to my local food production system, my local farmer, and building that community again is just so exciting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've done a great job with this, because honestly, as busy as I've been, especially over the last year, as the project went through many trials and we finally found a good coder that could get the work done properly. And we burned out two that didn't work out, and that was a nightmare. Like for the last year, I basically said, John, it's on your plate, get it done. And you did. And I thank you for that. And I appreciate it. It's awesome that we have all of these things coming together here. Right at Permaculture Voices, it's cool that it's like the TSP survivalist crazy community are the ones that are really making new things up, and we're just making things happen, and it's awesome to be part of it. And I thank you for being with us today. And I think you've got a little bit more time overseas before you're done, or are you done now?
I'm done this summer, and then I'll be moving back to the States full time. And I would like to say, just as kind of a plug for Jack. Jack had to speak at the same time as Joel Salatin, and he was, he didn't actually say it, but I could tell if it was me, I'd be a little concerned that I was going to have to speak opposite of Joel Salatin. And Joel Salatin had a longer presentation, and I actually went to the beginning of that, and all of a sudden, about halfway through his presentation, audience members started leaving one by one. There's this slow migration out of the conference room. And I looked at the time, and I'm like, oh, hey, Jack's about to start. And then I just kind of jumped into the crowd, and I followed him right back into the room where Jack was going to be speaking. So I think that has says a lot about the amount of people that are here and that have been turned on to permaculture because of the work that you've done.
Felt really good. I don't feel good for Joel, but I feel good for me because I really did feel like I might be sitting here with like 20 people.
I think Joel can handle it.
Yeah, Joel's had plenty of big crowds. Well, anyway, man, thanks for being on with us today. And I want to bring bring on Gary Collins, who you guys know is a member of our expert council. Gary's here kind of with a different perspective. Because, Gary, of course, you're part of the Primal Power Method. And, hey, man, look
out. Yeah, you're wearing my shirt.
Wearing your shirt today. Yeah. I said to my wife today, when she goes, you're wearing Gary's shirt, I said, yeah, I'm going to do him a solid. And she goes, where did that come from? I'm like, that's like 30 years old doing a guy a solid. And she had never heard of it before.
We're old now.
Yeah, I guess we're old, yeah, but it must be a guy thing doing another guy a solid or whatever. But you are kind of new to permaculture, and you come at this with a military background, a government background, health and nutrition background, and a background as an FDA agent. And you've had some opinions about organics, and we've talked about it. And I'm wondering how you're starting to actually evolve your thought on organic versus, you know, what permaculture quality food is, as you're starting to see the remineralization of soil, the better treatment of the land, better treatment of animals.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Even though newer to the permaculture kind of thought process introduced by you, I come from a background of ranching. Far as I grew up in a small ranching town in the Sierra Nevadas, that historically had been a long time ranching town. So I understood the premise and the principles, but for me, I've always preached that, hey, you want to get your food from your local farmer. You want to know where your food's coming from. And the USDA organic side was always, well, for the people who are more disconnected or live more in major cities, if you got to go get a type of food, get USDA organic is a better choice than going just getting something off the shelf.
And I would still say that. That's your two choices.
Yeah.
Local first, you know, organic second, mass market third.
Yeah, and for me, I've always taught that, and I think people realize that, and they're kind of shocked, especially some of your listeners, because they don't know me real well. Some of them, they're getting to know me. And actually, I got a comment on Brink of Freedom today.
Awesome.
And he was talking because of my GMO article on there. And we got into a little bit on that, and he really appreciated that. I always preach, go get your food from your local farmer.
Yeah.
He was really impressed by that, but that's what I believe. I mean, even though I'm new to permaculture as far as the definition and the name.
The movement itself.
The movement itself, but the philosophy I'm very familiar with.
I think permaculture actually is very in tune with just human philosophy.
Yes.
But we've just lost touch with our human philosophy.
Yep.
We lost touch with the fact that, and a lot of people feel like, well, I want this, but they don't know that it's available, or they don't know they can do it in their backyard. Now, you're actually making some major lifestyle changes yourself. You're right in the middle of, like, socialistopia, right? And you're kind of a libertarian guy. And
I would say kinda.
Kinda, like a lock and sock libertarian. One day we'll drag you over to anarchy. But we'll say that for another time. But you're actually kind of moving out, I'd say a little bit more than a bit, right?
Yeah. Well, and what I'm doing is I call it getting back to my roots.
Yeah.
In a way. Because, like I said, I grew up in a small town. I'm talking 1,800 people. You know, one stoplight. And I grew up hunting, fishing, and, you know, camping. You know, we'd camp for a week, duck hunting, and out in the middle of nowhere. So I'm going back from where I came from and going back to it by, you know, buying that land in Washington and making a new transition and learning more about what you teach as far as the permaculture side. And I'm trying to integrate that into my genre, because my genre, I'm the only guy, I haven't seen anyone else from my genre, I'm the only guy here, you know, and I'm in the primal paleo world.
Oh, you're definitely the only guy here at this conference?
Absolutely.
I haven't seen anybody.
I haven't seen anyone.
There's a lot of people that are paleo primal type dieters, right? But they're not in your space actually, like, marketing it or what have you.
Absolutely, and to me that kind of speaks to the movement and how I've complained how it's disconnected. You know, they've got one piece of it, but they're missing the whole pie. And I always talk about how I teach.
Yeah.
I'm trying to teach the whole thing. It's a lifestyle.
You think that the type of lifestyle that permaculture creates actually just kind of leads to really a primal level diet? There might be some differences with some people with the legumes or more tubers than you would personally recommend. But in the end, you're not going to be growing lots of grains in a permaculture backyard garden or what have you.
No.
You know, we've seen in the history segments that, like, no one fed grain to cattle, like, 500 years ago because it was impossible to waste grain on cattle. So even if you're eating grains from permaculture production, you're going to eat a hell of a lot less.
Yeah.
Right? And you're going to be heavy on good quality vegetables, nutrient-dense food. And you have even acknowledged that there may really be something to, you know, how bad the modern diet is based on these, you know, legumes and grains versus the old diets where people were eating old varieties, highly mineralized soils, active lifestyles. They ate, you know, amounts of grains that would make anybody a type 2 diabetic today, but yeah. They weren't type 2 diabetics. And we really don't know the mechanics of that yet. We're still got a long way to go there.
Yeah, and that's where I try and differentiate as well, is understanding that what I'm teaching when you take on the paleo side or primal side and you're reducing the grains in paleo, it's no grains,
correct,
no legumes, no dairy. And the reason behind that is not necessarily that these food products were bad in of themselves. They're bad today, especially.
Mm-hmm.
65 to 75% of humans are lactose intolerant. But you go to northern Sweden, well, 70% of them
are
not.
Or if you give lactose intolerant people raw milk, often they're no longer lactose intolerant because there's enzymes removed.
Digestive enzymes, yeah.
Right? They're not lactose intolerant. They're pasteurized milk intolerant.
Right? Well, yeah, and there's so many other things going on as far as hormones and the chemicals in the feed and what the cows are getting as far as anywhere in their environment. You know, what happens if they're right next to an airport, which I've seen.
Yeah.
I've seen cattle ranches, and there goes the plane right over it. You know, so you're ingesting that as well, and that's what I try and teach too is, hey, I don't say you can never eat any food a type again. I don't say, oh, you can't ever have a beer, you can't eat a sandwich.
That's I'm glad you don't say that, because we wouldn't be friends.
No, it's insanity. It is. It's insanity, you know? And I think that's too of a hard approach. I just use the 80-20 rule. You know, if you follow it 80% of the time, another 20%, you fall off and it's a treat.
Yeah.
Don't make it a regular type of your diet. But as far as grains, it's like, okay, you want to integrate grains into your diet or you want to keep them in because you've traditionally eaten them. Well, how are you going to do that and stay healthy
Correct. If
you can't find an heirloom grain that was unchanged from 200 years ago? Because we can't even go 100 years ago
now because
we've hybridized so many.
There's a lot of them out there, but it's hard to find.
Hard to find them.
And hopefully what we were just talking about with things like agricultural will make them easier to find. I mean, I've got a red winter wheat that's over 200 years old.
It's
in great supply. You can find it, and it does well in Texas, which is not really a wheat-growing state. But it's pretty adapted to southern climates. But, you know, I'm only going to, in the end, if you're going to grow it yourself, or even it's going to be small-scale production, we're not going to produce 10,000 acres of wheat or soy in a permaculture model.
Yeah, you're going to use it here and there.
Correct.
You know, it's going to supplement your other main nutrient-dense food sources.
And your thing is, well, back all of the stuff that we know to be toxic off, clean your system out, and then try reintegrating one thing at a time until you find what works for you, and you give a person kind of the guidance toward finding their own lifestyle. Because I think your philosophy and mine are a lot alike. When I talk about modern survival philosophy, I don't give you the things to do. I give you the philosophy, and then you develop your own plan. Because if I tell you to do my thing, you'll do everything I say right up until you disagree, and then you'll fall off the wagon. Where if I give you freedom and some flexibility with guidance, you'll use the guidance to develop something for yourself.
Well, and it is. It's about, you know, you don't want to be we're already sheep.
Yeah.
So why do I want to teach you how to be a different type of sheep?
Yeah.
You know, my philosophy.
I'll move you from the alfalfa to the clover, sheep. Yeah. Bah.
It makes no sense.
Come here, let me get your wool.
Our whole thing is why I've become such good friends is all about self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
You know, I can give you the basic tools, but I don't want you to be a Gary clone.
Yeah.
What works for me is not necessarily going to work for you.
Yeah.
And why would I want it to be that way? Why would you want to be exactly like me?
I don't know, man. I really, you're kind of short.
I am. I'm a short guy.
I'm teasing you.
You know, but I'm wiry. I'm really scrappy and quick. You know?
You're good, man. I'd be happy to look like you.
Well, no, I got a quick side story, funny story. I was at WTO in Seattle.
Okay.
And, you know, everything went bonkers, and there's, you know, tear gas, and, you know, and we got in the same hotel with the LA Lakers at the time, and it was when Shaq was playing.
Okay.
So we're all trapped in this hotel, and I was working for the State Department, and, you know, we got all of our gear and all of our, you know, guns and all that good stuff. And Shaq grabs one of the police officers' Kevlar helmets right off his head, just palms it, and puts it on his head, and it looks like one of those little baseball, you know, those plastic caps. And he turns and he looks right at me and goes, "What are you going to do about this?" And he's got a stick right here. He's got a little, you know, he's got the baton, and it looks like just, I mean, it looks like
a matchstick or something.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And I go, "You know what? That's why they give me a gun." And he just started laughing, you know.
I could see that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you
know.
Brush with fame.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I always use an excuse for my small size is, you know, I carry a big punch.
You carry a big punch to 44, or 9mm jitsu is your martial art of choice, you'd say?
Yeah. But I just had to throw a little side story,
well,
a comedy
cool,
in there.
Hey, but, you want to tell folks again, because maybe for some people out there, it's the first time they've ever heard you on the air with us during a Gorilla podcast especially, how they can find out more about what you're doing?
Just go to www.primalpowermethod.com, and that's my website. And my book is Primal Power Method, Change Your Body, Change Your Life is the main one. I'm getting ready to release a book on GMOs and organics here. I actually just got an email from my editor while we were sitting here.
Oh, cool.
And waiting. And I've got a lot of exciting stuff going on that we've talked about.
Very
cool,
you
know, man. I'm trying to integrate
the
whole survival.
I gave you
lifestyle.
A bunch of homework and whatnot, right?
I know. You gave me a ton of homework, and I'm about two-thirds of the way through it. So I hope your listeners enjoy me, and I've gotten a great response, and I think they understand what I'm trying to do.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you being with us here today, Gary.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Well, cool. It's great to have Gary on there. We actually have one more person I wanted to have on the air with us, guys, before we leave. Recent guy that was on the air, people really loved you, and he's here all the way from Australia. Byron, hey, man, it's cool to have you sitting next to me, man. It seems like a week ago we were talking, and you were over in Australia, and now you're here with us.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind week, man. Like, thank you for your gracious help to get me here. And I woke up on Monday morning, and I got a letter saying that I had a flight to LA, and I booked the flight, and 10 hours later I was on the way to the airport, and now here I am.
There's a lot of synchronicity going on in this event, you know, just with a lot of things coming together at the same time. It's kind of overwhelming. You want to remind folks kind of what your work's about, what you're doing in Australia right now?
Okay, well, my background is in horticulture and forestry, and then I moved to permaculture, and amongst a number of things, what I'm doing now is focusing on perennial permanent agricultural systems for the southwest of Australia, which is a climatic analog to places like California. Like Perth, where I'm from, is like LA, you know, like western facing, 32 degrees latitude, coastal plain with hills and mountains behind it. Like, it's the same place. And I had the pleasure of last week of spending the week driving Joel Salatin and Darren Doherty around West Australia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. So that happened serendipitously. That fell into my lap. And then, like, I get home from that, and I've got a ticket to Permaculture Voices in Temecula. It's been crazy. But that was a great opportunity for me to catch up with farmers throughout the southwest of Australia. And, like, they're open, man. They want to be moving into perennial, stable agricultural systems, and it was just really great for me to see that firsthand from these guys. It was cool.
Now, you're from Australia, which is kind of the mothership of permaculture.
Yeah.
As you're here now in the States and you're at an event like this, is it encouraging to see how adopted it's really becoming in America? Because I think you guys are really ahead of us, especially in urban scapes, but it seems like now maybe we're starting to catch up.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen systems, so to speak, but just from the amount of people here and the amount of teachers and facilitators that I've seen here and gotten to know briefly, I'm blown away. And just the general knowledge of the people who are here that I've been speaking to, I'm really impressed. It's awesome.
And tell us about, you've got a book that you're working on right now, what that's going to be about when it's finally available.
When it's finally available, if my kids let me finish it, that'll be an introduction to permaculture plants. So that's like a breakdown of the world of horticulture and botany, but from the perspective of permaculture. So you don't have to sit through all the nauseating core units that have nothing to do with what you want to do. And it helps, you know, it's about the human-plant relationship, essentially. Yeah.
So how much work do you think there is yet to be done in that world? The research into new varieties and cross varieties and even just stuff that's already there and how to use it?
I think it's certainly not mainstream, but, I mean, you speak to people at events like this, for instance, we already have a really good idea of where we should go. Like, it's not rocket science. It's just the, like, on-ground nuts and bolts breeding programs. We've got a long way to go. Like, this guy, Professor Joseph Simcox, I just met before. He was one of the seed guys down at the front floor. blew my mind, man.
He's with Baker Creek?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good guys, man.
I mean, he's coming out to Western Australia now with me.
They might shake him down if he tries to bring any seeds with him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah, man. West Australian plant quarantine is the strictest on the planet, I think. It's crazy.
So, just kind of on a final thought, if you were advising someone right now who is getting into the world of permaculture, because we have a lot of people that are trying to make a go of doing a business, what would be some of the advice you might give them?
Oh, man. I mean, first of all, just follow your passion, because I'm sure it's there. If you're like me or anyone else I've ever met, the minute you know, catch that bug, so, you know, something lights a fire under your butt, and you just, you know. So just follow that passion. Find out exactly what you're really passionate about: horticulture, animal husbandry, appropriate technology, and just follow your passion, man. I mean, there's plenty of books. You could go do a lot worse than hitch a ride to somewhere like PRI Australia and spend 10 weeks of the Zaytuna internship. That's what I did, and it kind of kick-started things.
That
for
was
me.
A huge eye-opener for you with energy systems, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I came from a conventional suburban background, you know, and spending time on that property was my first foray into the world of true energy accounting, and that's an invaluable experience. Yeah, if you want to really get a grasp of what it is we're trying to do,
because it makes you think a lot more critically about your design decisions too. Because if you have to haul something uphill that you never should have, you're going to be doing it over and over and over again. There's no truck to do it for you, or
that's
or what
right.
have you.
It just really helps you to digest that appreciation deep in your bones, so you're making those decisions kind of like.
Gravity energy is free, so make sure you're using it for you rather than against you, and many other things that seem self-evident. We've lost the self-evidentness of them over time.
Well, that's permaculture. It's self-evident. I mean, how many times have you explained permaculture to someone who didn't know what it was, and they've gone, well, that's just common sense. And you go, yeah, well, why am I explaining it to you? Right? Yeah.
Hey, you've got a website where people can learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, it's www.oaktreedesigns.com.au.
Yeah. And it's oak tree because you actually think we have a long way to go with oaks as well. That's one of the most underutilized assets out there.
If your genetic heritage is from the Northern Hemisphere, as mine is, whether it's European, Asian, or North American, you owe a lot to the Quercus genus.
All right, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you being with us today, Byron. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks, man.
Especially a long trip like that.
Thank you.
Folks, with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. I got a bunch of people around here, and we've got a lot of stuff to do. I know this wasn't an official episode, but it seemed really cool to me, and I was glad I could get something up on the side for you guys while I was gone. And with that, this has been Jack Spirico with, I think, our first ever true guerrilla podcasting episode, unnumbered episode. We'll figure out some way to make some kind of contest out of this thing in the future. You guys have a great day. We're going to have a blast for the remainder of the conference out here.